that's just not fitting. The boxes are very limited. One thing we have to be committed to is, I think, researching the widest possible body of data instead of being very selective because of personal biases or personal preconceptions about what we're going to consider. But the problem is, when you put it in the box, you don't have a good fit. If what's going on here were known to someone, it would be worth the rest of the world's attention, certainly, to know what the answers might be. I don't have any. We were talking about theories a while ago. Certainly everybody's got a theory. I would like to comment on something you did say earlier, though, about perhaps these creatures might have been our creators.
Yes.
I think probably if we wanted to examine a variety of evidence types, including some of the more ancient records, we might find that they could be considered more correctly perhaps interloping farmers.
Interloping farmers?
Well, the way that we as a species, the human species, has taken over wild animals time and again and domesticated them and genetically altered them for our benefit.
Well, that's true. While we certainly did not create cows,
we
could be considered their farmers, couldn't we?
Exactly. And we've genetically manipulated them through the centuries through selective breeding programs in the beginning and then through more laboratory-type methods in the recent years.
All right. We use cows for food.
Right.
While you don't rule that out with regard to how the aliens may be using us, what is your best guess, based on your research, as to what they're doing with us?
Well, they're doing a variety of things with us, and this is what makes it hard, Art. We know they're taking certain kinds of substances from us. They take sperm, they take ova, they may well be taking fetuses, if we can trust the perceptions of the people who've reported this. They take body fluids, they add fluids to our system. They take flesh samples, hair samples. They take energy. In fact, one of the more common things that I began to run into when I was making connections with many other cases of abduction reports was a phenomenon that some people call being vacuumed, where you're in a totally normal physical energy state, and then as if a switch were thrown and a vacuum sucks all your energy out, you totally are without any energy. It's more than exhaustion. When it's happened to me, I couldn't even move my lips to talk. And it took a 15, 20 minutes of recovery time to regain energy. So they certainly are taking energy in some way.
All right. I've talked to a lot of people who call up who think they have been abducted or tampered with in some way. And they have awakened in the middle of the night to a paralyzed state. Is that a common report?
Sure. It's a common report. They either wake paralyzed or become that way soon after perceiving entities or a light in the room. Yes. But if it were all just happening in the bedroom, I think we'd have a very different phenomenon. You know, of course, from the other calls you've gotten that it happens to groups of people at the same time. It happens in the middle of the day, on the highway, in town, at parties. So we're not dealing with something that's easily explainable as a night phenomenon, but that does seem to be a very, very common occurrence.
And again, your view is what? There's a genetic reason, perhaps, for all of this experimentation?
I think part of it may be, given the kinds of reports we have, that they are certainly doing something that's quite physical in both its aim and its procedures, that this is not a spiritual phenomenon primarily, as some people would very much like it to be. The purpose of a spiritual phenomenon is not being served by a number of procedures that are reported over and over again in the abduction scenario. These are very physical concerns. Brain operations, blood alterations, implants, for instance, which would really have nothing to do with a spiritual phenomena.
That's true. What is the state of the research into these implants? I know that we have actually some physical samples of implants. What is the best available evidence? Do you know?
Oh, very little, to tell you the truth. The best available evidence I've heard recently has concerned reports of analysis into a number of potential or alleged implant objects, but so far nothing has turned up that is easily explained. Some are completely terrestrial materials, but that still doesn't explain who made them or for what purpose. Others appear to be just anomalous in the sense that they can say what it isn't, but they can't really say what it is, nor, in fact, that it's extraterrestrial in origin.
All right. Is it necessarily extraterrestrial in origin? And I go back to my visit last week with Dr. Mack from Harvard. He said that, look, a lot of these implants that have been analyzed have turned out to be very terrestrial in terms of the materials in them.
Exactly.
Dr. Mack is not blind to the possibility that these creatures, whatever they are, may come from either another time or another dimension, but in fact from this Earth, on some plane, from this very Earth. And if that would be true, it would explain the materials being common to this Earth.
Certainly, if they had been interacting with our species for a long, long time, they would know very well the materials on this plane or this Earth.
Sure, they would.
Wherever they come from, if they came from another planet, if they came from another dimension, if they came from a dimension parallel to ours on this planet, those are all possibilities because we don't have any answers. And they certainly behave as if they dimensional hop, in a sense. They manipulate dimension. They manipulate time, there's no doubt about that, and their physical activities, as we've observed them, show they manipulate spatially.
All right. In your book, Taken, you go into 8 separate cases.
Right.
Apparently all women.
Yeah, this time around, I focused on 8 different women's cases. I thought it gave, one of the points of doing this project was to give an adequate sampling of in-depth reports so that correlations and comparisons could be made, and I thought it was one more factor that was part of the correlation process that these cases all happened to be women. The book I'm working on now that should be available by December concerns one man's case, so I don't just work with women.
All
I
don't
want to leave that impression.
All right. And by the way, there are very few by number women who are UFO investigators or investigators in your field. Most of the people investigating in this field seem to be men. Have you noticed that?
Of course, yes. And it's not been easy to be one of the few women in this field, I'll have to say that, although some people have made very good efforts toward me. But still, I think not only do I have that strike perhaps against me considering the numbers of women who aren't in this field, but also I have a strike in some people's eyes against me because I have had personal experiences that in some people's thinking is a contamination that means I shouldn't research. And I guess I could see their point of view, but I think on the other hand it gives me additional advantage in researching.
Well, if you really had the experience, and I went 48 years of my life, Dr. Turner, without seeing a UFO and then finally saw one almost a year ago, it compels you, and so I can easily understand why you would dive into this research. It's not easy. What have your colleagues said?
Academic colleagues?
Yeah, that's right.
Very little. In confidence, several have talked about personal sighting experiences, but never publicly. I left the area where I was teaching in 1991, was the last semester I taught in the spring, and I moved to another state, so I really haven't been in contact with them since then. What they may think about it now, I can't tell you. However, they are among the rest of the population in this abduction statistic field, that there are people at the university level who have experiences, just like there are, in one case, probably the most extreme as far as deprivation I know, a case in the Ozark Mountains of a family so remote and so without access to what we would think of as contaminating material. They had no electricity, no television, no contact, very menial labor, and the woman was totally illiterate and couldn't read. And yet her experiences parallel those of the college professors and the doctors and the artists and the housewives who also have this.
You said there were a number of things, or at least a few things, that you could nail down as certain about this entire phenomenon.
Well, there are certain things that I have now, to my satisfaction, I accept as fact rather than as theory.
What are those?
Well, so some of them include, for instance, the fact that we don't know, there is no evidence. It is a fact we do not know where these creatures come from or what, in fact, their true nature is. In other words, I have not found any of the theories to explain their origin or their nature to be overwhelmingly proven by the data.
Let me try approaching it, though, from the other angle. Are you convinced, Doctor, through your research, that this is a hidden hand, that there is, that there are aliens, no matter where they may come from, who are here.
Yes, I have personally experienced it. It's a matter of knowledge and experience with me, not even a conjecture.
Not even a question.
No, no question. What they are, I cannot tell you, and I don't think anyone else can either, but they're not us.
And as to their purpose, all you're sure of is you don't know.
Well, I, on my list of facts, number two on the list is that at least some of these creatures are consummate liars and deceivers. This is a fact. There is no doubt. And the evidence goes back to the beginning of the contactee scenario all the way through reports I've gotten in the last week from cases that are ongoing now.
All right, give me a good example. What makes you believe they are consummate liars?
Well, they have made over the years to particular individuals a number of very specific predictions or warnings or scenarios that have never come to pass. Sometimes small events that they predict in the beginning of a list of warnings or predictions will occur, which makes the person who's received this list of predictions very take the list at a very credible level and prepare for these other things to happen, and then they do not happen. Now, this goes back to the early 50s as far as reports of interactions and communications from these creatures. They also have given a number of contradictory explanations to various abductees for the same procedures, or the same part of the agenda. For instance, and as I talk about this in Taken, one woman was shown at one point during some of her encounters a cloned copy of her body. It was inert. Now, well, this happens in a number of cases. Many people have reported seeing inert human bodies, sometimes copies of themselves, sometimes not, just other bodies. And one case, Pat was told that these bodies were for the resurrection. Now, throughout Pat's experiences, a religious symbology was employed with her because it was she had a very strong basic faith.
Is it your view that those who start out with a very strong religious faith attribute their experience to some sort of religious occurrence?
I think they may tend to, and I think that tendency is greatly amplified by the programming of the aliens themselves. They'll take on whatever guise works or follow whatever procedure really accomplishes their program.
Let me take it from their point of view for a second. Why do you think that these beings are not connected to what we think of as traditional religion in some way? A lot of religious people will say, well, these are devils, or they're angels, or they're spirits, and this is not an area we should be even looking into.
Well, my personal answer would be that they do not behave in the reports we have from abduction accounts anything like, or very seldom anything like, any of the reports of spirits and angels in our religious literature that these people use as the basis of their beliefs, for one thing. As I've said before, I have never yet found anywhere in the Bible where one of the angels' duties was a rectal probe on a six-year-old child.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
All right, now that's a starting place for questioning that. Secondly, the entire range of their procedures with us make that very suspect. The physical activities are numerous, and nothing like this seems related to a spiritual agenda, if that's what they were pursuing. I will agree that they indoctrinate and program us throughout these encounters, if that's going to be effective with us, to take it on a spiritual level. For instance, with Pat, when they first abducted her entire family back in 1954, the creatures told her that, she said, "Are you angels?" And they said, "Yes, but not as you have been taught."
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but that works with Pat. In another case, with Lisa, she was also shown a clone of her body. And she was not told anything about a spiritual use for this when the resurrection, when Jesus returns and we get our new bodies. No, she was told instead that this body, well, it was used in a sense to threaten or warn her that if she were not cooperative with the ongoing program of whatever it is they're doing with her, mm-hmm. that she could be replaced by this body and no one would ever know the difference. Those are not consistent answers.
I wonder how many of us have been replaced.
Well, in the next book that I'm getting ready to publish called Masquerade of Angels, we're going to delve into exactly that question because the...
That is the title of your book, the working title, Masquerade of Angels?
It is the title. It is, yes.
Oh, what an intriguing title. What made you pick that?
Well, I hope you'll get a chance to read this story, and you'll probably see for yourself. It deals with one man's experiences, a psychic, practicing psychic, for 20 years, more than 20 years, a man named Ted Rice, who began his work in Atlanta and is now in Louisiana, has lived a number of places, and grew up in, intellectually and spiritually, grew up into the spiritualist, metaphysical, what would be the precursor of the New Age movement very early on, very intensely, very actively. Dealt with what he thought were spirit guides for a number of years until he had a massive, very intense abduction experience by obviously not spirit creatures aboard a spacecraft along with a number of the neighbors down the street where he lived.
So he did a quick reassessment.
He did begin to look for some explanations. Nothing his spirit guides had ever given him had anything to do with this, had ever prepared him or discussed it, whatever. So we began this has gone on for several years now. The investigation into his lifelong series of events is probably more in-depth than any one investigation I've been involved in, and we've got a number of signed affidavits attesting to the veracity of the accounts. We've done hypnosis with a number of people after their conscious recollections have been recorded. The verification of these series of events is extraordinary, and among those, we have to deal with the question of cloning and replacement, and in fact, the nature of the human soul, and what we may not have understood about it all along.
The nature of the human soul.
Exactly. Because one of the things I will not discount, one of the things that's on my list of facts is that these creatures show a very, for me, very disturbing interest in the human soul.
That's very interesting, Doctor. I did a series of interviews with a friend of mine whose name is John Lear. Do you know that name?
Yes, I've heard Mr. Lear speak on a couple of occasions back in the 80s.
Mr. Lear, in latter interviews, and I'm going to do another one, I hope, with him soon, referred to the human body as a vessel for the soul. That the aliens regard our bodies as a vessel for the soul. Have you heard him say that?
I've not heard him say that, but I have heard a number of abductees who have reported being told that and having that lesson stressed to them by the aliens, and I think there is a reason for that. Certainly, that one of the things, not only in much of the alien contactee and channel material, but also in the New Age movement in general.
All right, Doctor, I've got to hold you there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Stand by. We'll be right back. This is Dreamland.
Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Much more than just a talk show.
Dreamland.
To participate in the program, call toll free 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Well, it is that. This is the Dreamland program. All the numbers you just heard, though, are just fine. My guest is Dr. Carla Turner. And she's written two books, working hard on a third now. The first two, one called Into the Fringe, and the other, Taken, Inside the Alien-Human Abduction Agenda. And frankly, that's what we've been talking a little bit about, is their agenda. And we're going to do more of it in just a moment. I'm Art Bell. Stay right where you are. It's not that often that I get a chance to tell you all about a product that is effective. We begin taking phone calls, I promise. So if you want to get on the lines, Dr. Turner is going to be available to you in just a moment. Dr. Turner.
Yes, sir.
I want to finish up on the souls.
Yes, I'd like to go back to what we were discussing about before the break, if I could, for just a minute.
Yes.
You were talking about John Lear saying that the bodies are containers or vessels for the soul.
That's right.
As very different things. Going back to what we were talking about even earlier, if these interloping farmers had begun genetic manipulations with the species that they found here to bring it up to a more useful level for them, one of the things that they might have tried to do or might have done was to increase the level of intelligence in the species so that it could, in fact, pretty much tend its own farm, if you get my understanding.
I'm afraid I do.
All right. And then this being what they proposed to do, the purpose of this, it inevitably having its own reactions thereafter in the species, what might have led up to the transition that we're maybe making to a new level of intelligence,
mm-hmm.
an additional perceptive intelligence. And if that were the case, and you knew that your cows were waking up in this manner, wouldn't it be one of the things you would want them to very much believe, something you would want to instill in them very deeply, to de-emphasize the value of their physical nature and physical existence?
Yes.
Wouldn't you, if this is a product you are using in some way, wouldn't
yes.
you want it to not have placing a great emphasis on its physical nature? And one of the things that they very often do tell abductees and contactees is that the body is of no importance, it is just a container, don't worry about it, free yourself from it.
Mm.
They downplay our physical existence very greatly in part of their programming. And I think I can see a reason why they might be doing that.
If they regarded us as we might regard cows who are slowly awakening, yes.
Right.
Ooh,
right.
It's very unsettling, disturbing thought, though, for an awful lot of people.
I know it is. It's for me, too. But when you start looking at the straight data, the real reports, not being censored and not being doctored in any way, you have to consider how do we account for all of this stuff. And we see over and over that they take from us, that they manipulate our understanding and screen our understanding of what they're doing with us, and they're doing a great deal of physical work with us,
mm-hmm.
which seems to be also is transgenerational. We've seen that an ongoing genetic sort of program, perhaps. And if we were waking up to the fact of our being used, our being a resource, certainly they would not want us to be overly attached to our physical existence if they're using it.
No, I do agree. All right, let's. I've got to do this. Let's go to the audience and begin to take a few calls. You've given me a lot to digest. On our toll-free line, you're on the air with Dr. Carla Turner. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Where are you, sir?
I am in Seattle.
Seattle, all right.
Great show tonight.
Thank you.
Great show. I really enjoy listening to the doctor. Now, you were saying that there's been reports of, like, bodily fluids being taken.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Now, what if, say, I was abducted 20 years ago, what are the odds of me receiving a phone call from Mars Collect and somebody wanting child support? I mean, what, you know, if I have a son that's 20 years old on some other planet, what are the odds that I might meet him?
Well, I think that's a humorous way to look at it, but I don't think you have to worry about it. If you were going to meet him, they'd probably make sure it took place. I would like to say, however, that I am not at all convinced they are actually hybridizing and breeding the way that they have very strongly led us to believe. I think there may well be something else going on, and that is a cover story, in effect.
Great.
So I wouldn't worry about any little babies out there as far as having living, breathing, individual, soul-like existence as we understand it. No, certainly they do take our reproductive material and they're doing something with it. The evidence does indicate in some ways that they may well be using all that material to grow their little gray worker machine.
Wow.
Instead of making hybrid children as the point of their work, it may be a resource for their slave system, their machine system, their industrial equivalent, whatever you'd like to call it.
All right, thank you. So, Doctor, the Grays, as we call them, you may regard as sort of worker bees?
Well, I certainly have, in my physical encounters with them, had a very strong and deep and clear impression that they were not soul-bearing creatures. People have reported over and over again that they don't seem alive, there's no emotion, there's no soul energy. And a number of these worker sorts that come in and do sort of routine procedures. Yes. And they are remarkably fetal, they're remarkably humanoid. They may be a genetically manipulated version of the fetus grown and developed in certain ways as a dedicated program machine.
Do you think, Doctor, this is way out in the speculative area, but do you think that we were supposed to become aware, or do you think that this growing awareness that we appear to have is an unexpected byproduct?
I think that it's likely it could be an unexpected byproduct. It may well be something that we would naturally have evolved to on our own without genetic intrusions at a much later time. It may be that there are other forces than human and alien who are also employed in the universe who may be helping in some way to wake us up.
All right.
There's a lot of possibilities.
On the wild card line, you're on the air with Dr. Turner. Good evening.
Good evening, Art. This is Jim in St. Louis.
Hi, Jim.
Dr. Turner, thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Art,
yes.
First of all, I had a question for you. I just was curious. I listened to the last couple of shows you've done last couple of weeks, and you always seem to hint at you always seem to ask your guests about the creators. What is your personal theory as to the creator bit? And as for your guest,
yes.
Dr. Turner,
yes.
What exactly are we talking about as far as the numbers go for this kind of this phenomenon? And is it happening worldwide, I mean outside of the country?
Yes.
And is there research being done in other countries? And also, I had a couple of theories that I wanted to run by you. The implant thing, being of organic materials that aren't otherworldly, isn't the best, I mean, I buy into the theory that that's just simply so that they're not detected.
I think that it works that way very often, yes.
Okay, and secondly, I was reading Dr. Jacob's book, Secret Life, and I was trying to figure out if I was being abducted repeatedly, and I had to put a stop to it. I mean, I was trying to think of ways that I would try to prevent this abduction experience from reoccurring.
Right, I can
and as I know that they don't seem to like, I mean, these beings, they don't seem to care for video cameras being around. They want to remain secret. Could you... perhaps handcuff yourself to your bed or something like that?
Okay.
We've had a number of people try a number of different ways to protect themselves at night, and of course you've heard the story of the person who did use a video camera set up toward the bed, and when on nights nothing happened, it showed absolutely no activity, and then one night, looking at the tape from that night, what it showed was the person getting up out of bed, going over to the wall, and unplugging the video machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
What about getting the help of a third person, literally handcuffing yourself to the bed?
I have one person right now has reached that point where they have tried tying themselves to their husband or to the bed, and it doesn't seem to make any difference.
All right. He asked a couple of other questions about the numbers and whether it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Well, Dave Jacobs, I know, probably reported, if you've heard him on interviews or at presentations he's given on the Roper poll a couple of years ago, that based on their statistics, estimated that perhaps 1 in 40 Americans had reported details that would match up with this scenario. Jacobs has said in public and in private both that those numbers were actually much higher than that on the original poll statistics,
mm-hmm.
and that frankly they watered them down because they didn't think people would believe them. So we're talking about higher potential numbers than 1 in 40, perhaps 1 in 20 or 1 in 10. We don't really know. Because, as we find out, when people do wake up and become aware of it, it's been going on throughout their lives without them being aware. How many other people are not aware yet?
There are a lot of people not aware, Doctor. And one phenomenon I've noticed from doing this kind of program is, of many of those who are not aware, when they're confronted with the kind of information you've been giving tonight, they respond with outright anger.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they flat get angry.
Absolutely, and that's a fear reaction. That anyone who has a very, very strong reaction, either obsessively or in angry and denying terms, one wonders what motivation, because that is not a typical, normal, unaffected reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand it. I don't want this to be true either, and I certainly have not been, I don't know that I would have ever chosen to be aware of it, to tell you the truth.
All right. On our toll-free line, you're on the air with Dr. Turner. Good evening.
Hello. How are you?
Fine.
I'm Kimian, calling from Portland, KEX.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello. I just want to make a few calls. Great show tonight, or a few comments. I feel that there are answers to these questions. Each weekend on Dreamland, we keep hearing, we don't have the answers, we don't have the answers. I had an experience in 1986, so similar to Dr. Turner's. I, too, in Las Vegas, saw a craft in the middle of a busy intersection with my husband at that time, and no one else saw it. And I've often wondered if that's a phenomenon that other people have experienced. My life changed after that. I did much, much research. And a lot of my research has led me to books and that involve people channeling information from beings.
Right.
Through telepathy. Through telepathy, the same way that these abductors communicate through the abductees. I know a lot of people are, you know, skeptical when we mention channeling.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, I'm another one, because there's no possible way to verify anything that they give us, much less the source of the channeled material. And I'm just a very skeptical person, by nature and by training both. If there is no way to confirm something, then it is certainly not, an idea or a piece of information upon which I'm going to base any serious response.
I understand. So many of us want to find this information through the regular, concrete way that we've done everything. And I really liked last week's show, because I think we're really beginning to get it out there that we may have to go through different avenues. We may have to look through ways we're not used to.
We may not have
things that are concrete.
Right. I think we are being pushed to that. Absolutely.
Of course we are.
This is just what we were talking about with the perhaps the transition to a species with more perceptive abilities. Because we have to learn to see what is happening to us, to perceive its reality, before we can ever respond and decide what response is correct.
Right.
It may well be that our response will be defensive. It may well be it's a spot response of accommodation. We cannot tell from channel material that is unverifiable which way we should be preparing.
Let me ask this. Many abductions have occurred, and I do believe that they are occurring, and I do believe there's a reason for this new awareness and this sudden awareness of these abductions. And they always say that the way that the abductors communicate is through telepathy.
Uh-huh, right.
So if, in fact, this is occurring, so many people, Art has never had an abduction memory. I don't have an abduction memory, and yet I believe it's true. I believe it when someone says, I was there, I heard them communicate with me through telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have very, very close friends, and myself, I have telepathic abilities, but I can't prove it. Just like the people who are on board can't prove they've been abducted. We have to start taking another viewpoint.
All right, I do agree, but Dr. Turner, I've got to admit, I'm one of the ones not very comfortable with the way you're laying it out. I don't know why. It's just, it kind of puts me on edge.
I wish I could give you a beautiful picture. I just don't have one.
Oh, no, I'm not asking you to do that. I'm just saying that my reaction to it, and I deal with this material all the time, my reaction is kind of a uncomfortable one.
In what sense, Art?
I guess in the way you're describing what you think their intentions toward us may be.
Right. You're uncomfortable in that it doesn't fit what you know, or it's uncomfortable because it would imply something you wouldn't like. I don't understand. That's what I was asking.
Yeah, I guess it would imply something that I wouldn't like, that I'm just not comfortable with, that we are to them perhaps as cows are to us.
I'm not comfortable with it either, but reality is going to be what it is, whether we're comfortable or not. That's what
true.
We're trying to figure out.
You're right.
Getting past the point of being uncomfortable or afraid or angry and all the other emotions abductees go through, and people who come to understand this is true, whether they've had it happen to them or not, that they're aware of, you've got to get past that to the next stage. That's stage one. Stage two is now, what do we do?
Okay, I'll bite. I like that. What do we do?
I don't know. We haven't all picked up enough yet to perceive it correctly. We are perceiving bits and pieces still, and we are so highly manipulated by these beings that the nature of it is deceptive and elusive, illusionary. And until we can see past that and learn techniques for penetrating that, we're not going to know how to respond.
Mm-hmm. All right. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Turner. Good evening.
Yeah, this is Jamie in Northeast Oregon listening to OK Gold.
Yes.
And my question tonight, well, basically, two things. The first one is in the evolutionary topic earlier tonight. Do you think that possibly, rather than evolutionary, that the awareness is due to the awareness of this phenomenon is due to our technology now being so much more advanced than it has been in history, you know, adding acceptance to the idea that we're not alone.
All right. I wouldn't think it would be our technology.
No.
What do you think, Dr.
No, I certainly don't. I think, for instance, what I see is in individual responses to the phenomenon, I see people waking up to some of the illusions while they're still in the experience. But they're not doing it through technology. This is a one-at-a-time thing that I'm seeing happen, and yet it has an effect, a ripple effect, through society's thinking and perceptions and acceptances. I don't think it's because our technology has perceived new things, but it has shown us at least that we're able, through other ways than the primitive five senses we know, to make perceptions. Now, if we suddenly develop the visual ability to see the ultraviolet and the infrared spectrum with our own eyes,
yeah,
you know, that would be a change. That would be a transitional, a new phase, or a new level of our perceptive ability. That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Back to the phone. So a lot of people want to talk to you on the wild card line. You're on the air with Dr. Turner. Where are you calling from, please?
Redding, California.
Okay.
Dr. Turner?
Yes, sir.
I have had an experience of, like, when your husband said that he was driving in the car and with his parents or something.
With his father, huh?
Yeah, and I don't know how to describe it, but I've had a really similar experience right down to the scar on the back of my leg. And I was wondering, aside from insatiable curiosity, is there more, like, altruistic reason you can give me for pursuing something like this and what I should do?
Reasons for pursuing the investigation of your own possible experiences?
Yeah.
Right now, to be brutally honest, I don't really recommend anyone pursue them.
Really?
Oh, good.
No, I don't. If they're giving you problems, if you're having emotional problems or relationship problems or physical stress symptoms because of repressed memories trying to surface, that's another thing. You may not have much of a choice except to go ahead and dive into it. But if it's just curiosity, and at this stage, knowing right now that two things. One, we don't know what to do about it at this stage. So it's not like I can say, yes, once you find out, then you can go do this and change the situation. You can't do that. At this stage, we can't do that. The second thing is that if we are truly going through this transitional process and maybe coming to awarenesses, it will evolve in its own inevitability with you. And it won't be a choice of trying to find out. It will be an awareness of because you're taking in new perceptive information.
Yeah, well,
but if you're not being pushed, if you're not being stressed, I don't see what purpose will serve by doing this. You will change your life so dramatically with this knowledge. If
I'd sleep a lot better.
Right, and you can never forget it once you have uncovered it. So, if you're not prepared for a real alteration in your life, I don't see why you would want to pursue it.
All right, thank you. So, in your view, unless there are psychological reasons, it could be more damaging to pursue it than to just leave it alone.
I won't say damaging, but I think frustrating as far as being, she said, now if I delve into it, give me reasons why I should know what I can do.
Yeah.
We don't know what we can do yet. That's why it would be very frustrating.
Well, I'm remembering Close Encounters of the Third Kind when it began to make mounds of potatoes and became obsessed.
Right.
With it.
Then you really don't have a choice. That's what I was telling her. If it reaches a point where something internal pushes her hard enough, she will make a breakthrough in some way, whether it's spontaneously or by feeling compelled to seek out an investigator or a hypnotist or whatever to try to get more information. Yeah, then that will happen because she has to do it.
All right. Dr. Turner, stand by. We'll come back to you. Break time. You're listening to Dreamland, kind of a disturbing one, on the CBC Radio Network.